episode of Pit Lane Parlay.
Welcome to another episode of Pit Lane Parlay. My name is host Mike Jokum. Jess and Matt are joining me for a very exciting St. Pete recap as the season has finally started. Guys, how are we?
Good.
Pretty good.
Awesome. And thank you again to Apex Pro for continuing their sponsorship of our episodes, the ultimate driver modification tool for racing, autocross, and high-performance driving events. Their powerful data acquisition hardware pairs free with the Apex app. If you search for Apex Pro in the Apple App Store, you can find it. To learn more, please go to apextrackcoach.com. All right, so let's dive right into it here. St. Pete, it was first off, I just want to comment and say it was a truly beautiful weekend weather-wise and attendance-wise. I think every day looked like a race crowd. I'll start with that and turn it over to Matt for his initial thoughts.
Yeah, why don't you let the pasty white one out of us three take this over, because you guys just got your tan on down there and I'm stuck in... It's actually raining today and all the snow is melting because of it and it's like flooding everywhere. It's kind of annoying here in Minnesota. But yes, super jealous of you guys going down to St. Pete. Hope you guys had a great time. We'll touch on that in a little bit too here. But yeah, as far as the race goes, Joseph Newgarden did win. For those who missed it, and then it was followed by Dixon coming in second in power, Rosenquist, Rossi, Hinch, Pagano, Herta, Ferrucci, and Harvey rounding out the top 10. Pretty incident-free day. There was a crash between Jones, who hit the wall, suffered an injury that we'll touch on a little bit here, and then Laced clipped him on the way by. Some pretty close moments, some pretty intense moments between Will Power and Scott Dixon, Will Power and Felix Rosenquist. But yeah, as far as the results go, it's pretty much dominated by Penske, Ganassi, and Andretti. What are your thoughts about any of the top 10 or anything that happened in the race or Joseph Newgarden winning, Jess?
I was happy to see Joseph win. I mean, I feel like he kind of got the monkey off of his back, so to speak. You know, he's not had very good results in St. Pete. And frankly, I feel like he just seemed relieved when we saw him in victory lane. He just looks like, you know, he was on cloud nine, basically.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And not to mention the fact that Tim Cindric really nailed the strategy on that one. Once he was on that last set of red tires there, he just seemed to, you know, pull away from everybody and lap everybody up to the 11th place finisher. I think Piggott was the last guy on the lead lap. So, he wasn't far from getting lapped. Thankfully, the race ended for him. But, you know, Newgarden drove a great race, you know, patient early on. And then once his strategy kicked in and he pulled away, you know, it was his race to lose and he didn't make a wrong move after that.
And as far as what Jess said, yeah, the monkey off of his back, he kind of touched on it when he got to the victory circle saying last year we may have settled too many times when we should have been pushing for it. And I always thought that was something that a couple of drivers in Team Penske in the past, mainly like Elio Castroneves, oftentimes just settled for a seventh or an eighth instead of thinking, you know, if I go for this guy and get fifth, I can do this. And so for Newgarden to nail the strategy that, you know, Cindric did a really good job of calling to get first, I really think if he can rack up a couple more of those and turn a couple eighth, ninth, tenth place finishes into fourth, fifth, or sixth, you know, he's definitely going to be a huge championship threat this year. Mike, any surprises, positive or negative, from the results that we saw?
I think the biggest surprise is the fact that within the first, 10 laps, 20 laps, both Sebastian Bourdais and Ryan Hunter-Reay had engine meltdowns. You know, obviously Hunter-Reay looked like the more crazier one with all the smoke billowing down the front stretch there. And I can tell you it smelled awful behind where we were standing. So I think that to me is the biggest uh-oh and slash surprise of the weekend. In a positive way, the biggest surprise is maybe not a surprise, but three rookies finishing in the top 10. You know, you expect Rosenquist to be up there. And you know, Herta's been strong in testing. Ferrucci's been kind of hit and miss. Didn't really have a great weekend until the race. But they really didn't make any wrong moves all weekend. So three rookies in the top 10 was a surprise, but great to see.
I'm going to add to your good surprise, just because he's running more races this season than he has. Jack Harvey also finished in the top 10. So let's not forget him, even though he's not got his rookie stripe anymore. I think that is really good to see, especially for his team. They need some good, positive races, clean races, and he had a good one for sure. As far as negative, yeah, I mean, obviously the Honda ordeal was a problem. I have to say, I think Ed Jones was my surprise in a negative way. He just had a really, really rough weekend. So I think he's going to be my negative surprise, because I just didn't see him struggling as much as he actually did during the weekend.
Yeah, as far as Jones, you're right. You know, practices and whatnot didn't go his way. Seemed like he was making good progress in the race, because I think he had just gotten around Pagano prior to, like, you know, the lap that he crashed. And so, you know, had he had kept it together, you know, maybe could have produced pretty good results. But, you know, that's just, you know, talk at this point, because when you crash 25 laps in a race, you know, what's really the point? You can't really predict too far into the future. So, yeah, that was kind of disappointing. And then, you know, I guess I'll just go with one negative here. I wasn't too impressed with Rahal Letterman landing in this weekend. Rahal was lingering towards the bottom of the top 10 for most of the day, if not just outside of it. Was running about 10th until he had some sort of tire issue at the end of the race and had to do an unscheduled stop. Sato was running, again, 9th or 10th area before his mechanical failure, but, you know, not the best showing from that team, especially since it seemed like, other than the Penske outlier, Honda seems to have the advantage at this point. So it looked like they were towards the bottom as far as Honda teams go. I guess I'll just throw in one positive. I do want to give a shout out to Dragon Speed and Ben Hanley. They did a good job this weekend just keeping everything together. You know, he had a couple offs in practice, just, you know, overshooting some braking areas. But as a whole, you know, their pace wasn't too far off. I mean, 1 second off of 23rd in your first ever race for the team and the driver, it to me is actually a pretty solid effort from them all around. And Hanley did a really good job of staying out of the way. I don't think I heard too many drivers after the race giving him any sort of negative feedback on social media or, you know, in interviews or anything like that. So all in all, I was actually very impressed with them. So hopefully they can continue an upward trend and just get comfortable with the car and everything moving forward. As far as the race goes, as far as, you know, you guys were on the track. I know Jess rewatched it. Mike, did you get a chance to rewatch the race yet?
I watched the YouTube 30-minute version today.
Perfect. So as far as the race as a whole goes, I want you guys to give it on a scale of 1 to 10, with 1 being the lowest, 10 being the highest. Jess, what would you rate that race as far as quality of racing? Was it a good race, bad race? What would you rate that?
I'm going to give it a 7.5. I think that there was a lack of passing after a certain point in the race, and that made it a little bit less exciting, but I really enjoyed seeing a good, clean race. The fact that they made it through turn one this year is like a godsend after all of the normal starts there. So I personally thought it was a really good race. I thought there was some action, and I was happy with it. I just don't want to give it too much higher because, you know, it didn't have the showiness of some of the other races with all the passing, but, you know, that's St. Pete too. So
I think I'm going to go just a tad lower than Jess and go with a 7, primarily for the same reasons. On the positive side, I thought from a strategy perspective, it was a really fascinating race to watch. You know, Newgarden be on a completely different strategy, at least tire wise, than everybody else. And there was at least, it felt like, 3 or 4 groups of, you know, cars. You know, there's a couple guys like Ericsson who stopped on lap 7. I think the Rahal guy and Foyt guy stopped pretty early for tires and fuel. So there was a lot going on, you know, for a little while. I don't think Marco was leading the race, but he was second behind Newgarden and looked like he might be able to pull out a strategy type win there, but our strategy type top finish there. But we know that didn't happen. And then he almost crashed into Newgarden when he was trying to not get lapped. overall, I'll give it a 7. You know, it got a little strung out at the end there, but that was just a product of Joseph Newgarden and Tim Sindrick really just dominating the strategy.
If I had to choose between having a pure race and being entertained, I would take having a pure race where there wasn't just a random debris caution or anything like that. Or if the banner's on the track and it's out of the way, throw a yellow just to spice things up a little bit. But having said that, I would go a little worse and just say 6.5, primarily for the same reasons like you guys have stated. For me, the biggest thing was if a driver was being held up by somebody, it seemed like they struggled to get around them just because of various reasons. And I can't wait to get to 2021, because I do think the engine power and having more horsepower and, you know, able to get more runs on guys will definitely help that. But, you know, primarily I saw a bunch of guys coming off the final turn and, you know, clearly getting held up and not able to execute the pass, which is kind of disappointing. But, you know, it was still a very good race and still had a lot of good moments to it. Not a good moment for me was my prediction, Ryan Hunter-Reay. And if I could just go on my soapbox real quick, 4 of my drivers I picked in fantasy IndyCar all retired for mechanical reasons, which sucked. What can you even do about that? Super frustrating. And one of those was Hunter-Reay. I was super high on him, and he had a great practice, was doing really good in the race, was running 6th, I believe. He had an engine failure, so my pick was out. Coming in next was Jess's pick with Simon Pagenaud, who did finish 7th. Had a pretty good weekend, kind of got the short end of the stick in qualifying, which we'll talk about in a second here. But unfortunately, Mike won, which means we probably get to hear some sort of...
Oh, yeah.
Right? Something.
Oh, like, yeah.
Anything that's on or anything like that?
No, you know, I'm just gonna revel in the victory you know, chalk this one up to being smarter than both of you.
There we go. All right. So I guess if we were keeping a running scoreboard, Mike is leading 1-0-0. So good job, Mike. And we kind of touched on it with Marco almost crashing Newgarden at some point there towards the end. James Hinchcliffe had some very strong opinions about Max Chilton, saying that I think I'm kind of paraphrasing here, but he's being stupid out there and wasn't letting guys go. The leaders were coming up to lap traffic and not being as kind as they could. I'll start with this one. I did see a little bit of that on TV. My understanding of how the rules work is if Joseph Newgarden, who's in the lead, is coming up to Marco Andretti, and Marco Andretti's on the lead lap still, Marco's not under any obligation to get out of the way unless Joseph is clearly making an overtaking move. So if they're side-by-side in the straightaway, that's the point where you should probably call it a day. But other than that, you have every right to try to stay on the lead lap. You know, don't block, don't do anything stupid, but you should try to maintain your position. Once you're passed by the leader, if second, third, fourth, etc. come up to you, it's probably a good idea to get out of the way, because that's where you start infringing on some rules. So to see some guys take some shots at lap traffic or say it was a manufacturer war, which don't get me started on that, I didn't see too much of it in the race, but maybe with Hinch, who was towards the middle of the field, and Chilton not letting him go, I could definitely see a situation like that. Mike, did you see any of that at the race when you were there?
Yeah, real quick, Joseph Newgarden actually stated in his post-race press conference that the drivers wanted the rule that way. So he said he didn't know if the rule maybe needs to be looked at again, but you know, a couple of years ago when that rule was changed to its current wording, which you're spot on, Matt, Marco didn't have to move over.
He wants it to, like, if he comes up to Marco and Marco's on the last car in the lead lap, that he just needs to get out of the way as a whole?
No, I think what Newgarden was saying is, listen, we wanted the rule the way it is now,
where
the last car on the lead lap doesn't have to get out of the way. You know, he can still battle for position.
Right.
That being said, quick shout out actually to Charlie Kimball, who was on the lead lap when Joseph Newgarden was coming up to him and just decided, listen, I don't have the pace you do. And I think he let him by in turn one. And, you know, Kimball's pretty notorious for not getting out of the way in situations like that. So props to Kimball there. I don't remember specifically seeing Chilton, you know, hold up Hinchcliffe like he said, but it wouldn't shock me, because I saw Newgarden and I think Scott Dixon have some trouble getting by Chilton, whether it was Chilton's fault or not. You know, Chilton definitely was holding some guys up.
I think the track has a lot to do with it too. In this particular case, it's hard to pass in the majority of the corners there. So there's only limited time for them to get around them. But I don't see anything wrong with the rule. I mean, honestly, I think that the guys who are on the lead lap when the leader comes up to them have every right to fight to try to stay on that lead lap, because you never know, while you're fighting to stay on the lead lap, somebody in the back might crash and you might get a pass. So I think the rule is fair. I think it's good. I know people do complain about it, but I don't see a problem with it.
Man, drivers who complain really drive me nuts. And even though I don't have the statistical evidence to back it up, Jess, what driver complained more than anybody out there who I seem to bring up on a weekly basis?
Is it a girl with long dark hair?
Yes.
Her name might be Danica.
You are correct. And so, again, I don't have any statistical basis to back that up, but the fact of the week is that she likes to complain, especially with situations that happen on the track. But anyways, that was just a little side note. We touched on it earlier. So Ed Jones was injured in a crash, was his left hand / wrist region. According to a report, he did break a bone in that area. However, he stated himself that he's still planning to race at the Circuit of the Americas in 2 weeks. So we'll just have to keep our eye and make sure he's medically cleared before that. So hopefully nothing's wrong there and that he can be on track and good to go.
Can I raise my hand?
Yeah.
Okay, so an article did actually come out today. He went to a surgeon, I believe it was in Miami, and I believe from the wording in the article that he is good to go. He should be able to race. He does have a broken bone, but it's not going to require any surgery or anything like that to fix it, so he should be good.
Wonder what the procedures on that are, like an official IndyCar doctor as they get the clearance on that. But, you know, medical professionals nowadays, they're pretty spot on, so hopefully that IndyCar probably won't have an issue. But
the IndyCar doctor is actually the one who sent him to that particular surgeon. So
perfect. So
I would imagine that they will take that surgeon's advice.
Crisis averted. So good to hear Ed Jones is okay. We had a little scare there, but everything seems to be good to go. We'll kind of run into a fan question here that we got from Mark Van Nykerk. Twitter handles at MVanny. There was the Hunter Ray engine failure that caused a large plume of smoke heading into turn one. And after the race, there was kind of a reverse angle camera shot of one of the AMR safety vehicles coming the wrong direction in turn one. So kind of against the flow of traffic to respond to Hunter Ray with the plume of smoke and whatnot. And after the race was over, everybody on social media, you know, looked at it and said, wow, that was kind of an unsafe incident. So Mark was just wanting to know our thoughts on that response vehicle incident and the potential safety issue. Mike, if you want to go ahead and share your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think the camera angle makes it look worse than it is, because that wasn't really too far from where we were standing. And I didn't see any issue at all. It does look like he kind of cuts across, but you know, when you're looking at it either from above or at another angle, I don't think he actually, you know, crosses that. Will they maybe tell the safety guys to look both ways before crossing the road? Might not be a bad reminder, but I don't really see any issue in the AMR safety guys driving there.
So, like you said, I think it was a poor camera angle. But just to add on to that, if you actually look at a picture from either above or, you know, from the outside of turn one, which is basically where he ended up stopping at, you see this huge runoff area that all of the safety crew and the pace cars park in. There's actually an ambulance and everything parked there. There's no walls around them or anything. So I believe that's why he was probably going against the flow of traffic, because he just pulled from where he was parked, like just kind of made like a loop. So I honestly don't think that there was any actual safety issue there. I think it was just a bad camera angle, and the smoke kind of didn't help to make it look less scary.
Yeah, and you know, you guys are 100% right, in my opinion. And the only thing I'll add to that is, in those situations, I'm going to trust that the AMR safety team was doing everything procedurally the best to their ability, and that they're the best in the business. So, you know, maybe Mike's right. Maybe just a quick reminder, or maybe if they have a different camera angle, they can review that real quick. But I have 100% faith that they're doing everything according to what they should be doing and just making sure everybody's safe out there. Prior, and thanks for that fan question, Mark. Prior to the race, though, we did get a bit of drama as far as qualifying goes. And if Mike wants to go ahead, he'll give us a quick recap of what happened in qualifying.
So qualifying got off to quite a hectic start, I think is a good way of putting it, with Marco Andretti had what I believe was a fuel pickup issue, and he stalled on the pit in section of the track after his install lap, which brought out red flag number one. Now, in this year in IndyCar, by the way, if you bring out a red flag in qualifying, no matter what, you cannot advance, which I hear was news to Brian Herta and Marco Andretti, which is a little surprising, but it's not a huge deal in the grand scheme of this qualifying discussion. And then they got back going to green again, and Santino Ferrucci overshot, was it turn one, and skidded into the tires a little bit, brought out another red flag. By the time all said and done, I think they had time. Some guys had time for one more flying lap, or not at all, unfortunately, because of how long it took to get Marco's car out of the way. So there were multiple people, Ed Jones included, who were very upset with how qualifying went, based on the fact that some guys didn't even get a lap in. I don't think Sebastian Bourdais got a lap. I don't think Pagenaud got a lap. There were some, you know, Ben Hanley ended up starting, progressing onto the Fast 12 just based on the fact he actually got a lap in at some point. And that's no offense to Ben Hanley, but nobody was expecting Ben Hanley to advance. My thoughts are, you know, like I actually agree with Will Power, where he said the old rule was, you know, you were guaranteed at least one flying lap no matter what. I would like to see them go back to that, but otherwise, the rule is what it is right now, and I don't have any problem with the way IndyCar handled things. I thought maybe they could have moved Marco's car out of the way quicker, but I do agree with them having to throw the red flag there. There was a few people on social media who said, why did they have to throw the red flag for Marco's car? Yes, it was in not on the track, but pit lane is still part of the track. So I'll leave it at that.
I actually threw my thought into a blog that I posted yesterday. Go check that out, by the way. But my thought on the qualifying rule, everybody has known about it for a while. It's not like a new thing that, you know, if they don't get a lap, they don't get a lap. The red causing a red rule is new this year. I can't see how Marco did not know about it since they announced it to everyone, but that's beside the point. My thought on the qualifying thing, though, is you are taking a giant risk as a team and a driver if you do not go out and run a lap when the green drops. You know that it is a possibility that somebody could have an incident and that 10 minutes is immediately gone because they can't get the track back open. So I think it's extremely risky to not go out and at least try to get a lap in when the green drops. I understand you're trying to save tires, but at some point, you know, you have to think about your day as a whole and not just your tire saving, because you could go run a lap and then wait and then run your flying laps at the end. But that's just my opinion. I think that qualifying was definitely kept us on our toes. Nobody knew what was going on, and the whole Sato Dixon thing, that was just interesting also. If you don't cause a local yellow, you don't lose your lap time. So that's why Dixon ended up moving on and Sato did not. So it was just a whole lot of crazy for qualifications. And frankly, I thought it was also kind of fun.
Right. You know, a little excitement doesn't hurt. And I thought, you know, Ben Hanley starting 12th, while kind of a little bit, you know, kind of a farce, does create you got drivers kind of moving through the field, drivers in the middle of the field who maybe shouldn't be there and are going to drop to the back, and, you know, thus create a little more action. You know, I'm not saying it should be that way every race, but it's nice to see it kind of happen once in a while. You know, I was expecting kind of big things out of Bourdais to move through the field, but obviously that didn't happen with this failure. But, you know, I'm going to trust race control's judgment on this one until they give me a reason not to. And in this case, I don't feel like they did anything they shouldn't have per se, unlike what conspiracy theorists are saying on social media, that it's just to aid Penske and or Willpower or whatever the thing is that's happening this week. So good job on all that. One quick thing. So Jess, you did use NBC Gold to rewatch the race, correct?
Yeah.
Any complaints?
None, actually. It worked really well. I saw some people kind of not really complaining, but a little confused as to why you couldn't sign up on your phone or your iPad or whatnot. I had no problem whatsoever signing up on my computer and then immediately turning around and logging into my phone. I watched the whole race on my phone last night, and it was actually kind of nice because you can fast forward through things you don't really want to watch again, say yellow flags. But I also enjoyed the fact that you get the pre and post race interviews and all of the stuff that's on TV. And I think, and this is silly, this is like a silly complaint. My only complaint is that instead of doing the timing on the top of the screen, like the ticker on the top, they are now using the big bar on the side and leave it up the whole time. And I just don't like the way that looks. That's my only complaint, though.
Oh, I love it. It's great to kind of see everybody all on one screen at once. And then, you know, they rotate through like 16 through 25 or whatever, 24. But, you know, that's just a personal preference. Everybody's going to kind of have their own opinion on that. So that's totally fair. I personally loved what I got on NBC Gold being stuck in Minnesota where it's cold. I love the broadcast quality of practices. I'm not the biggest fan of IndyCar radio. If you saw me tweet about that, you know, I don't feel like what they're talking about a lot of times matches what's actually happening on the racetrack. And then when the free stream was on YouTube, a lot of time timing and scoring wasn't included with the live action. So you had to have another screen kind of seeing where people's times were at. So I personally really liked it. I think, you know, you get the usual crowd out there saying, why would I pay for something that was free last year? I'm not going to do that. That's dumb. You know, it boils down to $3 to $4 per race weekend. And to me, it was totally worth it. So let's move on here. Mike, did you have anything to throw in about NBC Gold?
I do not, because I shamefully admit I haven't signed up yet. I think my dad did, so I'm just going to steal his login for whatever weekends I'm not at the track.
Perfect. So as far as track observations, since you guys were there, anything you guys want to point out to the fans or anything that, you know, maybe was missed at home or anything that you saw from the race itself, you know, the venue, the track, anything like that, Mike?
Overall, I thought it was a great opening weekend. As we saw announced today, the TV numbers were pretty solid. You know, nothing super spectacular, but up versus the last time the season opener was on an NBC station. And up from the first race that was on NBCSN last year. So all in all, good to see that. The track crowd, even on Friday, I think I mentioned this early on, was amazing. It looked almost like a race day just for practices. And I think there was a USF 2000 race. So I think everything that from a fan perspective at the track was fantastic. The autograph line on Saturday was one of the longest I've seen, and I'll leave it at that and turn it over to Jess.
The only thing I kind of want to add, obviously the crowds were huge all weekend. It was amazing. I was really happy. I'm pretty sure I probably wore Mike's ears out saying, oh my God, this is so great.
Accurate.
But the only thing I kind of want to add is I did see some people kind of complaining about actual track conditions, such as where they have the manhole covers and, you know, they just cover those over or whatever. We walked the track during the 5K, and frankly, the track looked much better in person than it did from some of the pictures I saw. So I can understand where people were a little worried, but we were actually on the ground walking it and it looked great. So I don't think that there was any issues there, and I don't foresee any coming, you know, next year either. So that's really it.
Are you saying that IndyCar fans were overly worried on social media? How dare you?
Just
a
tiny bit.
Oh my God. No, never. Yes. What they said, all I can say is it looked really warm on TV. So
it was.
Hope you guys had fun without me. Moving on. For those who missed it today, which is Tuesday, we did have a quick 20-ish minute special kind of episode published for those who want to listen. It was actually Jess, Mike, and blogger Mike Knapp who joined Mike and Jess during the race weekend and did a lot of great things. And we're really appreciative of what he did for the podcast and all the things he does for us. They actually got the chance to sit down with George Steinbrenner IV, who is co-owner of Harding Steinbrenner Racing. Super cool dude. My only complaint is I do miss the flow. He got a haircut. I do miss the long locks. Those were pretty awesome. But it was a great interview. Very well-spoken guy. And then Mike and Jess and Mike Knapp all gave their thoughts about the race weekend and things like that. And so Colton did have a very good weekend. Was very good in practice. Could have easily made the top six in qualifying had the, you know, sessions and whatnot played out his way and got the penalty for blocking Kimball and things like that. But we had another fan question from IndyCar_27, first name Brendan. He wanted to know our thoughts about Colton for the rest of 2019 after what we saw in week one. And I'll start first. If you have a fantasy IndyCar pick to use next week, please, for the love of God, pick Colton Herta. He had such a very good test there. He's familiar with the track and is definitely getting more comfortable with the car. Everything he showed me this weekend, he's looked very solid, smart, poised. You know, I said I was a little concerned about him in our preseason preview about, you know, finishing races, but he didn't put a single wheel wrong all weekend. I am very much on the fence still because I still said that Erickson's going to win the Rookie of the Year. However, Herta is definitely going to give Felix and Marcus a run for their money come season's end. Jess, what did you think of Colton after week one and how it looks for the rest of the year?
I think he did absolutely fantastic. I was honestly a little shocked at how well he did because he is a rookie and, you know, usually you have those rookie mistakes and St. Pete is a notoriously difficult track to make passes on and everything else. And I think he, you know, he kept a cool head and he did what he needed to do to finish the race. And frankly, he did really well. So I think he's going to have a great season if he keeps doing what he did last weekend. And I think he's going to be really, you know, I think he's going to be good. Do I think he's going to win Rookie of the Year? Probably not, but I think he'll be battling for it. I definitely don't think that he's going to give it away easy. We'll put it that way.
Yeah, and one quick note on the Harding Steinbrenner special release episode. Every race that at least one of us is at will have an interview and recap like we released today on Tuesday, and it'll be every Tuesday after the race. So you'll be sure to check it out, and thanks to Harding Steinbrenner for being so accommodating and you know, scheduling it and letting us talk to George in week one. It's a, you know, short interview, but he's incredibly well spoken for a young guy. My thoughts on Colton, you can check some of them out in that episode, but I'll expand on them a little bit here. My biggest concern for Colton was that at points in his Indy Lights career, he took unnecessary risks to try to get to the front. The Freedom 120-17 comes to mind off the top of my head, but I think he, you know, he played race one exactly how he needed to. He didn't take any unnecessary risks, just gave what the track, you know, gave him, or took what the track gave him. Do I think he's going to win Rookie of the Year? No, but I think he has a good shot at, you know, the finishing second. That's certainly for sure.
Sweet. So go Colton. Big fan of him. Should be a great rookie season for him. Finally, one thing to quickly touch on before we throw it to Mike for Patreon shout out number one is as far as Indy Lights goes for the race weekend, they did have two races. Zachary Clayman DeMello did win race one, and then Rinus VK did win race two with a little bit of controversy with that contact with Oliver Askew, putting him in the wall in that turn two area. But he did keep the car in one piece and did win that race. So off to a good start. We'll kind of recap you guys as the season goes with the results and whatnot. So we'll toss it over to Mike.
Yeah, and real quick, shout out to Parker Thompson, who we had on a couple months ago for winning both Indy Pro 2000 races on a one-weekend deal. Hopefully, as many people have said on social media, he can turn that into some sort of full-season ride with Able Motorsports, or maybe another team picks him up. But he's a hell of a driver, and I hope he can continue. So round one of Patreon shout-outs. Let's start with the newest first. As of today, thank you, Sean Crawford. Thank you to Mr. Stephen King. Thank you, Mike Silver. Good to see you this weekend. Obviously, thank you to Mike Knapp for you know, not only subscribing, but all the help this weekend. And thank you to Mr. Let's just do another mic. Michael Goodyear.
Perfect. All right. So a couple things to touch on here as far as driver news and whatnot. So for those who missed it, Pato O'Ward, who's had an interesting couple of weeks, we'll say, did get announced as Carlin's full-time second driver in the races that Charlie Kimball will not be racing in, except for the Indianapolis 500. So it looks like Carlin will have those three cars at the Indy 500 with Chilton, Kimball, and Pato. So Pato will be in for 13 races this year. I think the couple that he won't be will be Texas, Pocono, and Laguna Seca, I believe. So that's very cool to see. Starting with Circuit Americas, he'll be there. His livery was released today, and it looks like it's basically what he ran in Indy Lights without the sponsorships, the same white, dark red, red, and lime green scheme. So, you know, very cool to see the Indy Lights Championship finally get something materialized and ready to go after the Harding deal fell through. We did have one fan question from fellow who joined us on fan night, Andrew Barker, who's F1 Andrew. What do you guys think? Predictions for Pato? Is he going to struggle kind of in the same arena that Carlin, you know, can't seem to get on their feet, or is he going to help lift up that team a little bit? What do you think, Jess?
I think he's going to lift the team up. I mean, honestly, I hate to say it and, you know, not to knock anybody, but I think he is probably got a little more talent than his teammates do. So I think he's going to be a good asset for that team. I think, you know, it's exactly what they needed, to be honest.
Yeah, I concur. I think that, you know, what I'm most curious about is, you know, racing in the Indy 500 and double points, will that, you know, and missing a couple races still be enough for Pato to contend for Rookie of the Year, you know, similar to how Robert Wickens, you know, still won Rookie of the Year despite missing the final three or four races of the season, one of them being the double points finale at Sonoma. So that's what I'm curious about, but I'm really excited and very happy for Pato. I think he, you know, he deserves it for a 19-year-old kid. He's a heck of a driver, and I think we're going to see great things from him, especially in Carlin.
And as my mother pointed out to me, she came up and said, you know, your prediction of Carlin making the big leap this year is starting to look smarter and smarter every day. So I'm going to go ahead and brag a little more on top of the Alonso news that they're going to align with Carlin. And, you know, it seems like, you know, the Laguna Seca test went well for them. They didn't have the best St. Pete, I'm not going to lie. I may have also predicted that. But, you know, I think Pato is definitely going to help the team move forward. And if anything, I think it's going to show more of a light on the fact that maybe Max Chilton's not up to par with the rest of the field. So we'll see. One quick driver news, James Davison is confirmed for the Indianapolis 500 with a Dale Coyne entry. Similar to last season, he will have Jonathan Bird, Hollinger, Ballardi on side of the car as well. So it's kind of a joint entry per se. So that officially brings the confirmed entry list up to 33 drivers. So definitely on our way to that 38 number that keeps getting tossed around. And then finally, can we say how cool it was to see Robert Wickens at the race at St. Petersburg? You know, he's given several interviews and was on Good Morning America and things like that, stating that, you know, racing this year is just not going to happen. I think that's been coming for, you know, quite a while. You know, it's starting to come more clear that he's not going to be ready, you know, maybe like Portland, Laguna Seca, anything like that. But he says that while 2020 might be an unrealistic goal, he's wanting to achieve that. So we'll just continue to follow his recovery. But it was really cool to see him at the venue. One thing he did share on social media is that if you do see him at a track this year, please wave to him. Do not come up and pat him on the back or anything like that. He says that that does cause him pain while he continues to recover from his injuries. So if you just see him at a track, just give him a nice little wave and, you know, ask him how his day's going or just say hi or anything like that. But, you know, just kind of keep a hands-off approach. You know, Mike, what did you think about seeing Wickens at the track this weekend?
Incredibly inspirational to see how much he was smiling the entire weekend when you could easily be, you know, pretty negative that you aren't out on the racetrack too. Great to see him and his fiance Carly walking around all weekend. Robert was at the main driver's autograph session on Friday, and got just as much attention as any driver that was racing, and then had his own autograph session and meet and greet thing Sunday morning. And the line was pretty long still. So, it's great to see. And like Matt said, hashtag wave to Wickens, or at least approach gently and, just don't pat him on the back.
I was really excited to hear him speak too. Just listening to his positivity it makes me happy, because it would be a very difficult situation for anybody to be in. And the fact that he is taking a positive approach to this whole thing is just awe-inspiring, honestly. It's amazing to see, and I just hope he keeps progressing. And he had kind of a funny moment in the media center. Someone asked if he was going to dance at his wedding, and he said he really didn't dance before, so probably not. But he was definitely looking forward to hopefully being able to stand for his wedding. So it's just so nice to see him be so positive and be such a good influence to everybody.
Yeah, hopefully we get him at more venues this year, because, again, he just kind of uplifts that whole paddock, and it's just great to see him. All right, so I'm going to try to put the stump in Stump the Host this week. Hope you guys are ready. So something I forgot to touch on earlier is we did our Driver of the Day poll, who we just kind of threw out the four best names as far as who did the best in St. Petersburg. And you guys get to vote on Twitter as far as who was the driver of the day, who had the best day. And I can't remember the percentage, but I think it was over 50% of you said that Felix Rosenquist had the best day, led several laps, did a great job, was very impressive in his debut. So my Stump the Host question is, as far as rookies making their first ever start in IndyCar, Rosenquist finished fourth. Who was the last driver to start their first race and finish in the top five in an IndyCar race in their very first start? And I'll leave it to either of you guys if you can get it. I'll be super impressed if you can.
Wow. Can you give us a decade?
It was in this decade.
Oh, boy. So let's see.
I'm not going like 1960s on you guys or anything
like
that.
Thank you.
Appreciate you.
Yeah, not 1911 Jess horse reference. Let's see here. I hope somebody out there knows this, because I'm grasping at straws. Will Power?
No, and Will Power was rookie in 2005.
Yeah. Sorry, Jess. Go ahead.
Give me just a second. I'm kind of thinking here.
I'll gradually give you guys some hints.
Alexander Rossi.
I don't know where he finished in his first race in St. Petersburg with Andretti, but it was not top five. No. If I remember correctly, okay. It was actually kind of a struggle bus for him that race. All right. Hint number one is he drove for Andretti.
Was a rookie in the past 10 years or 9 years. Oh, God.
And number two is it's the biggest race of the year.
So it's the 500. Carlos Munoz.
Yes, 2013. For those who don't remember, on that final restart, I think he was third and then managed to pass Hunter Ray for second while Kanaan took the lead, and then there was a yellow for Frank Keady. So could have darn near won that thing. But Munoz just showed up in 2013 and amazed everybody. Fantastic talent at Indy, and did finish second in his first career start. So that was the last time we actually saw a rookie in their first ever race finish in the top five. So Felix Rosenquist set a bit of history at St. Petersburg, so good for him. Almost saw it with Wickens last year too, before the crash and the final restart there at St. Pete. But, shout out to Rosenquist. Did a great job all weekend, and definitely like Mike, Jess, and Jim Aiello said in the preceding preview, that probably the rookie of the year. I'll still continue on my beaten path and say it's going to be Erickson, but we'll see as the season goes on. Mike, let's toss it over for Patreon shoutouts.
All right, Patreon round two. Thank you, Colin Taylor, David Lighting, our buddy George Butts. It was great meeting you and the wife this weekend, and Jason Camps, and last but not least, Matt Gruenholz. Thank you, everybody, Patreon and not Patreon, for your continued support.
All right, so kind of touching on some quick news items here before we move into a discussion we're going to have. The third engine manufacturer, Jay Fry, and hashtag and Jay Fry we trust, we love you, states that he wants the deal to be done soon. Adam Stern, who we had on a guest a couple of months ago, has reported, and this hasn't really been confirmed by anybody else, but has reported that it's actually might be a German engine manufacturer that may be this third manufacturer we see jump into IndyCar. And so after doing a quick Google search and kind of just going off memory, the big ones that came to mind to me were Audi, Porsche, BMW, Mercedes, and Volkswagen. If we have Volkswagen, hopefully they don't cheat on their emissions or anything like that. So fingers crossed there. And then as far as that, the engines go as well, Jay Fry said that as long or on top of adding more horsepower, that the engines will also be louder, which to me is definitely a good thing. Never a bad thing. I feel like engines throughout my lifetime have gotten actually quieter over the years. So to bring some noise back would be kind of cool. Jess, I know we've talked in the past. There's some Italian brand of car that you drive that Mike always forgets that you wanted to see, or, you know, along those lines, Alfa Romeo or something like that. If you had to pick one of those five German manufacturers, do you have a preference?
Oh, probably Audi. I just only because I think they put so much effort into their racing platforms that it would be a good fit, and they would come in and really give Chevy and Honda a run for their money, I think. But honestly, I just want to see a third one. I kind of am just thrilled with the prospect that it could happen so soon.
Yeah, Jess, you stole my answer there. So for the sake of not picking the same one, so we can revisit this when the third OEM is announced, I am going to hope for BMW. Their sports car program has always been pretty solid, and they've been investing more. I think they're in Formula E now as well, so they've been expanding. So I think expanding into IndyCar would be great for them. And there was a BMW hospitality tent this weekend at St. Pete. I know that probably means next to nothing because there was the GT4 and the sports cars there this weekend, but it would be a good place for Mark Miles to just sneak into the hospitality tent and have a meeting. So that's my terrible putting two and two together and assuming that's going to happen because of that.
Don't you know how YouTube and social media works? That's what you're supposed to do. We're supposed to just assume things and then say it's fact and then hope people believe us.
Oh, right. I'm sorry.
BMW to IndyCar confirmed, everybody.
I confirmed it.
There you go. Jess also stole my answer, which is kind of annoying. Although if Audi does come to IndyCar, it'll be interesting to see if drivers who are with Audi tailgate people instead of passing them, because that's what usually happens on the highway. I'm not too big of a fan of BMW, if I'm being completely honest, because they'll just give you the middle finger for no reason. And so in that sense, I've actually never had a problem with a Porsche driver on a freeway. So I'll just say Porsche for that reason, because I don't really have a better argument to say. But yes, like Jess said, hopefully we just get something, and something of quality this time, unlike Lotus. So that way, definitely can help grow the series. And that's kind of the one thing it's missing at this point, plus the new engine deal coming in a couple of years, I think. Definitely a lot of positives there moving forward. A couple quick items to discuss. McLaren did have a press conference at St. Petersburg. Their sporting director, former IndyCar champion and Indianapolis 500 winner Jill DeFerrin, says the team is focusing on 2019, and so their 2020 plans either haven't been discussed or, you know, started to evolve or anything like that yet. So we'll just have to wait for them to carefully play with the media after the Indianapolis 500 to kind of figure out what they're actually trying to do for 2020. Hitachi, who was on Joseph Newgarden's winning car at St. Petersburg, did announce prior to the weekend that they will be on 8 race weekends with Joseph Newgarden and the Team Penske. So that's good to see. They were a longtime sponsor of Helio Castroneves prior to Castroneves retiring. And then when we did our season preview, we had talked about the Indy Lights season, and Julian Falchero was stated to be with just St. Petersburg for Ballardi, but they actually expanded that to the full season. My memory escapes me as far as how well he did, but it seemed like he was up to pace and also did have a very good Circuit of the Americas test. So looking forward to another established entry for Indy Lights, because with the low car count, it's always good to see more cars enter. Mike, I don't know if you have any thoughts on those three.
Great for Hitachi to, you know, confirm 8 races. You know, we'll get a couple from Shell for Newgarden as well. And I'm sure one of the other Penske sponsors will step up like they always do for the remaining handful of races. I'm not too surprised that McLaren is saying, listen, we're just focusing on the Indy 500 right now. That's pretty much all I expect out of 2019 and maybe even 2020, to be completely honest. I don't know anything about Julian Felchero, and I didn't really see too much from him on track this weekend. So not too much to say there, but I am glad to see that the Indy Lights full season car count is up to 10. So, you know, up a couple from last year, and I wouldn't be shocked if throughout the season, you know, maybe around the Freedom 100, we get an additional entry or two, even if it's, you know, part-time. So we could see car counts, you know, in the 12 to 13 range for some Indy Lights races, which would be a great step in the right direction.
I am going to leave it with just one comment, and it's going to be about McLaren. I personally can't wait to be toyed with for the next year.
Perfect. I threw that little comment in there just for you, Jess. So we're going to shift into a quick discussion before we get to our pitfalls. Roger Penske came out this week prior to the St. Petersburg race, and I don't know if he expressly told Jim Aiello in an interview or if he just said it in a general sense and Jim Aiello picked up on it and published a story. But he said that the full-time drivers in the IndyCar series should be guaranteed an entry into the Indianapolis 500. That way we avoid a James Hinchcliffe-type situation where, you know, one of the prominent drivers gets bumped from the Indianapolis 500. And with this year, with the expected 38-ish entries that we're going to get, 5 drivers are going to be going home. And, you know, there is no hiding from the fact that one of those could be Graham Rahal or Marco Andretti or someone of substance who could really help promote the race. But, you know, if they're sitting on the sideline, that may hurt the sport. I'm pretty sure all three of us are going to be on the same page here, so I don't know how much time I spend on this, but we can go ahead and start with Jess on her opinion about Roger Penske's comments.
Frankly, the fact that it came from Roger Penske is extremely surprising to me, because he knows, you know, better than anybody what that race means. I am almost disgusted that he would even think that, let alone say it. I absolutely do not agree. You should have to battle your way in. And I mean, that's just how that race is. It's the prestige of even being in the 33, let alone winning it. So I absolutely do not think anybody should ever be guaranteed an entry. They should have to qualify just like anyone else.
Yeah, I'm going to recommend everybody go back and read Jim Aiello's article last year against bumping. Not that I necessarily agree with it, but it is a very well-written article and well thought out. Obviously, all of Jim's articles are good, but this one was especially good, and it really does make you think. That being said, I do not agree, and I think about 85% of the people who voted on our poll that week or that day also agreed. So I'm going to keep my answer short here in that I don't agree. I don't think it's a good idea. Sponsors are still going to come in as we see IndyCar, you know, continue to grow and all the efforts that NBC and IndyCar has put in. Yes, I know Aero might be a little bit of an outlier in how much support they put in, even with Hinch bumped, but I think it's best for the sport when the biggest race of the year has that much drama just to get into the race.
And for me, I'm honestly trying to figure out what he's worried about, because I think all three of his drivers qualified in the top 9 last year, didn't they? What does he have to worry about? There's no reason why Penske should be showing up to the Indianapolis 500 worry about his drivers making the field. I mean, it's Team Penske. There's nothing that you should worry about unless he's thinking another 1995 is going to happen where both of his drivers get bumped. If you know, let's say 2 of the 4 of his entries get bumped from the race, you know, that would be devastating to him. And I think that might be lingering in the back of his head, you know, now, because this is one of the only real bump days we've had since Penske started coming back to the Speedway. You know, there was a couple of years where, like 2011, there was 38 or 39 entries. But a couple of those, like, you know, Dragon wasn't really very good. 2001, 2002, 2003. There was a couple entries on there that weren't very good. It's Team Penske. You know, you shouldn't come in with that, you know, what if we get bumped mindset. And I'm trying to figure out if he is. So yes, the guaranteed entries is a stupid idea. We shouldn't be letting Roger Penske trying to dictate policy on this one, because last time he tried to dictate policy on something, we had a 12-year split. So that's just my two cents on it. I definitely think nothing should change. And, you know, the Speedway picks the 33. And, you know, if you're not picked, unfortunately, you just show up next year like James Hinchcliffe is doing this year. So I guess that's my thoughts on that. Anything else to add before we get to pitfalls?
Let's get to the pitfalls.
Who wants to go first?
I'll take it.
I will.
Okay. Oh, we both jumped over each other. Jess, okay. Ladies first. Go right ahead.
Mine's actually going to be short and sweet. So this just made me chuckle a little bit. It goes back to the NBC Gold package. So our favorite reporter, Jenna Pryor, she posted, I forget what day it was. Anyway, she posted sometime over the weekend how she was extremely disappointed because IndyCar was not showing the NBC Gold coverage in the media center, implying that she wasn't able to watch anything. Later, she did come around, I think it was actually the next day, saying that they were showing the IMS Productions, the closed circuit TV, but she wanted the NBC Gold coverage because she basically just wanted to see it. And she wasn't able to do that in the media center. She was upset. We were in the media center. The coverage was fine. so I don't really know what she was talking about. The coverage was exactly like it always is. NBC Gold is just what is seen on TV versus the closed circuit TV, which is honestly not much different than what's seen on TV. It just doesn't have the commentary that goes with it. It's pretty much just watching the screen and seeing the timing and scoring at the same time. So I really don't know what her complaint was or why, but she basically dogged IndyCar and said, this is why, you know, media is struggling. And yeah, I mean, it was just absolutely typical Jenna Pryor.
Yeah, I think media is struggling because of people like Jenna Pryor. Maybe she should have just gone outside and got some sunshine and realized that she was in Florida and probably could just walk five steps and watch practice. You know, that's just my two cents. And, you know, if you don't have the NBC Gold package in the media center, so what? You still get something, which is better than nothing. So I guess, I don't know if Mike had any thoughts on that.
My only thought is, you know, at no time has IndyCar or NBCSN or NBC or IndyCar PR or anybody indicated that NBC Gold would be played in a media center. You know, it's pretty much the typical what's been played in the media center, at least since we started the show. And I would imagine probably for much longer than that, since before I even knew what a podcast was. So I'm just going to leave it at that. Matt, would you like to go next?
Sure. And before I get to my pitfall real quick, I do want to comment on something we forgot to comment about, which was the NBCSN blackout during the race, which honestly, A, was not a very good look for the first full-time season that NBC has IndyCar. For those who weren't aware or weren't watching, there was like a 12-minute blackout per se. There's no video. It was just kind of the commentators talking what sounded like a radio fireside chat kind of deal. Wasn't the best look, kind of made me a little anxious at home. However, can we stop panicking and say it's the end of the world and that IndyCar is going belly up because of it? Because that is a very hyper overreaction to what came down to a production truck overheating, which they said like almost never happened. So just wanted to throw that in real quick before I get to my actual pitfall, that the world is not ending because IndyCar wasn't shown for 10 minutes.
Good to know.
Anyways, moving on. My pitfall is good old Eric Almirola, who I had some respect for prior to last week. And that kind of all disappeared. I don't know who he was talking to per se, but Eric Almirola said he has no interest in driving the Indy 500. Fair play. Like, that's not the worst thing I've ever heard. If he said that, like, you know, there's no issues there. However, he goes on to say that IndyCar does not excite me. It's a lot of car and some driver. The audacity for a guy who's driving in a series where pretty much every race is a restrictor plate race this season to say that IndyCar is just some drivers and all car completely baffles me to the point of infuriation. I don't even know if that's a word. I just made it up. But I would love, and I think it was John Andretti who said, how would you know if you've never driven it? So I'd love to see Eric Almirola show up to any oval on the circuit and be 7 seconds slower than Kyle Kaiser in a Yunkos car. I would love to see that day. I'll just stop there before I say something I shouldn't. Do you have you guys have any thoughts on it?
Yeah, I'll jump in here real quick. Kind of echoing your point, the NASCAR cars this year that don't have to lift off the throttle or really brake on essentially almost every single oval here on out is definitely made me chuckle a little bit. Not sure where he's getting the it's mostly car and some driver in a series that doesn't have power steering, doesn't have a ton of downforce anymore. And, you know, as evidenced by this weekend, there were guys sliding all over the place every practice and during the race, guys were really, you know, working hard. So I'm not really sure where he's getting that opinion, but yeah, I don't think I'll ever be rooting for him ever. Jess?
I kind of feel like this is a classic case of clickbait. I mean, because it's just so, I don't know, it's just so out there, honestly. But I mean, maybe not. Maybe he truly thinks that, and I have no idea why he would think that, but maybe he really does. But I just feel like maybe he's doing it for the attention more than anything, because he got it. People are talking about him. So I don't know. I just, that's it.
It's a fair point. I'll wrap it up with the last pitfall here is to, I don't know, some NASCAR fans who think Kyle Busch is greater than Kyle Petty, despite their quote unquote win totals being equal, that would be attributed to Kyle Busch's NASCAR Cup Series wins, Xfinity Series wins, Truck Series wins, K&N Series wins. I'm obviously exaggerating, but you get the point. I think Kyle Busch is a very good driver, don't get me wrong. And obviously I'm not the biggest fan of his, but, or not the biggest NASCAR fan, but he's still a good driver. But comparing his 200 overall wins to Kyle Petty's 200 Cup Series wins just doesn't really add up for me, because you can't compare, I don't know, let's just say who raced, you know, Scott Dixon won some races in Indy Lights. Let's say Scott Dixon did USF 2000, Indy Pro, and Indy Lights and had 12 victories added in there. You can't add them to his victories and then compare him to AJ Foyt. So I just don't get the comparison. I feel like you're trying to pump up a star more than he already is, and he is a star NASCAR driver, but it just seems completely off base.
Oh, but wait. Sorry, let me get my voice ready here. Hey, man. Richard Petty and Kyle Busch drove in different eras. Doesn't that make it different? Doesn't that make Kyle Busch just as good as him?
No.
Because that's what I got on social media. I'm like, are you kidding me? No, that's not how that works. Like, you know, you're right. You know, Kyle Busch has 53 wins in, you know, the top flight. Beyond that, who cares? Like, does it really matter if he's won 75 truck series races? Like, does that factor into Richard Petty winning at the top flight? There is a little argument to be made that there is, you know, it was different eras, but that's not the only factor that goes into it, in my opinion. Jess? Oh, go ahead.
Yeah. I feel like that's the only thing I can say is just, yeah.
This question is literally just baffled Jess to the point where she doesn't have an answer.
We have made Jess speechless.
Which is like extremely rare. Yeah, I don't know what people are thinking when they come up with these little, like, I don't know what to call it other than thoughts. They're just not thinking this through. I also saw one where I can't remember. Somebody got compared to Dale Earnhardt Sr. And I was like, ooh, no. But I can't remember who it was now. But it seems to be in the air with the NASCAR fans right now, comparing people who are just not comparable to the greats in that sport. And I will be honest, I don't care for that sport. So maybe I'm not the best person to ask for their opinion on this, but just no.
Well, I think I remember Jess saying one time to me in a bar that she would take Marco Andretti over Michael Andretti. Do I remember that correctly?
Oh, boy. I don't think that happened.
No, I don't remember that.
Well, you were in a bar, so you know that's going to happen, that we don't remember those things.
I'm going to wrap it up. Obviously, that did not happen. wrap it up by saying that I would be interested in Kyle Busch racing the Indy 500 because I do think he's a good driver, but the comparison is just off base. Anyway, with that, thank you to everybody for listening again all off season. And I'm excited that the season's here. I think we're in for a really good season with what we've seen so far. So plenty of more content to come, including the Harding Steinbrenner special episodes every Tuesday after the races. Pretty much every race this year, I think, with the exception of Long Beach, that I don't think any of us will be making it out to. So make sure to tune into those. The Harding team has been very accommodating and excited to do these special episodes. So you'll get somebody different each race, and it's going to be a lot of fun. So Jess, with that, feel free to sign it off.
And guys, keep your lug nuts tight.
The music for this week's episode was done by Impulse Studios. Web design courtesy of A30.com.